if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
In the 18 years I've been practicing medicine, I really can't think of anything that I've done that has such incredible immediate responses as virtual reality.
What if a hospital patient could suddenly be transported from his or her room to a much more engaging environment? That's a premise Dr. Brennan Spiegel and his team are exploring right now. Dr. Spiegel is the Director of Health Services Research at Cedars-Sinai, and he and his team have been conducting a pilot study on the use of VR headsets among hospital inpatients. Their findings have some exciting implications for the use of digital technology in healthcare in the future. The following podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please contact your healthcare professional with any medical questions. Dr. Spiegel, how did you first become aware of virtual reality as something you could use in a medical setting?
Well, I've been hearing about virtual reality for several years now, but about a year and a half ago, I had an encounter with a local company here called Applied VR in Los Angeles, and they came to meet with us and demonstrate the immersive potential of virtual reality. And at that time, I realized that we could potentially use the technology in the hospital where patients are in four walls of a room where they are experiencing pain, anxiety, uncertainty, and to be able to transport somebody from the four walls of their hospital room to Hawaii or to Antarctica or to Iceland or even to the stage of a Cirque du Soleil performance was an appealing concept. So that's how this idea evolved.
Tell me the story of implementing that, please. What was your first day of that like?
Well, the first day of implementing virtual reality was interesting. We found that many patients did not want to use the technology. When we explained to them that they would put headset on their face and we would then bring them to different fantastical worlds, they looked at us sometimes like we had two heads. And it makes sense. I mean, if you're in the hospital, you already have lost a lot of control over your environment. And there's a strong sense of vulnerability. So then to cede further control by being almost blindfolded in a way, having a mask on your face and not knowing what's going to happen next is not altogether appealing to many people who have not heard of virtual reality or experienced it before. In fact, the first patient that I spoke with was a woman, 45 years old, with her daughter at her bedside, and she had metastatic cancer, tragically. And I walked in with a pair of goggles and said that we can transport her to Hawaii or this place or that. She looked at me like I was crazy. And sure enough, I felt sort of ashamed almost to ask her this. She died days later. It's tragic. So I hear a lot of excitement about virtual reality and digital health in general, but sometimes the people talking about this stuff don't realize the reality in the clinical trenches that we're talking about, biopsychosocial illness experiences, life and death issues, and sometimes something like virtual reality is not appropriate, or putting a wearable sensor on somebody is not appropriate, whereas other times it is.
What about the woman with the cancer? Was she ultimately able to put on the headset?
No. She had no interest in putting on the headset.
The thing that might scare me if I were a patient would be, am I going to get sick to my stomach? So many people have a problem with inner ear when they put this on. What do you do against something like that?
Yeah, so there is a risk of vertigo. With the newer headsets, we use the Samsung Gear and the Galaxy smartphone, which has a fast processor. And that processing speed is very important to minimize latency, you know, visual latency, which is basically the phenomenon where there's a slight disconnect between head movements and instantaneous changes in the visual field. If there's even a slight lag, then it really throws off our vestibular systems and can cause dizziness. Most people do okay with that, but I happen to be prone to motion sickness myself, so I'm very sensitive to this concern. So we haven't seen much of that, but we don't give it to anybody who suffers from motion sickness, who has active vertigo, or even has active nausea, vomiting, or other kind of neurological symptoms in addition to GI symptoms. We'll avoid using the goggles in those people.
What do you see in terms of reactions from the patients that get around the fear and we'll put on the headset and we'll go through the experience?
Right. And I've started off with sort of a negative light, but the reality is that many patients are interested in using the headsets and have had outstanding reactions and responses to them. We've just published our first paper on this and described some of our early experiences using this at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. And patients have had, in many cases, unbelievable responses. In fact, in the 18 years I've been practicing medicine, I really can't think of anything that I've done that has such incredible immediate responses as virtual reality. Now, virtual reality doesn't cure people, but you know, I had a patient recently with severe abdominal pain from an unclear cause, and she had received a lot of different medicines, including narcotics and morphine, and that didn't work. And then she got a ketamine drip, which is an expensive analgesic, and that didn't work. And then we walked in and brought her to Iceland with virtual reality, and she literally had zero pain at the end of 15 minutes of that, and she was discharged the next morning. And that's just one example, but we're about to start a large randomized controlled trial to see whether this is true across large groups of people against a control population.
Tell me a little bit more about the trial, please. What groups of people? When does it start?
So we're starting the trial very shortly here at Cedars-Sinai. And this will be anybody who has pain in the hospital of a score of 3 or greater on the usual 10-point scale. And as long as they don't have contraindications to virtual reality, like dizziness and vertigo and so on, or seizure disorders, they're eligible for the study. So we're going to randomize people either to receive virtual reality. They'll have it at the bedside so they can use it whenever they want to and select from a wide range of visualizations. Or they'll be randomized to a control condition where they'll watch a nature channel on TV, which we currently have. It's common in hospital settings to have nature sort of visualizations on the television, a two-dimensional, you know, experience that's not immersive like virtual reality. And we're going to compare pain scores between the groups, also look at requirements for pain medicines, and the length of stay they spend in the hospital, plus their satisfaction with the hospital visit, and see if there are differences.
By when do you expect to have the data from this? By when do you expect to know what differences this makes?
So we're going to start this study in the next few weeks, and we've already done a lot of pilot work. We expect to recruit about 120 subjects for this study, so 60 per group, and we will likely have results by the end of this calendar year, if not before. That will be written up for full publication. We're fortunate to have support both from Applied VR, that's the company we're working with putting the software together and the visualizations, and also from Samsung, who's been providing us with headsets and support to conduct this research.
What have you considered so far to have been one of your most exciting findings or experiences since you've started working with the VR?
You know, I think it's just to see the reactions of people when they put the headset on. I've seen stoic men move to tears after just a few minutes of wearing the headsets. Not just men, women, children. I've seen lots of different people emotionally moved. Had a young man, for example, who was in a grievous motor vehicle accident. He was thrown from a scooter and had massive injuries to his body, required multiple surgeries, had facial fractures, had all sorts of injuries, and was in a great deal of pain. And he was on large doses of narcotics and really having trouble keeping the pain under control. So we were asked to come in and we applied the headsets. And really within minutes, he was just in a new world. He was flipping around the bed looking every which way, more mobile than he had ever been, and laughing and completely engaged. And his mother was there, and, you know, she started to cry, and the family was crying, and he himself was moved greatly by this experience. And like I say, there's very few things as a doctor that I can do in 10 minutes to make somebody's life better than what I've been able to see with virtual reality.
What kind of a VR experience was he having?
So in that case, we first put him on a helicopter and he toured over Iceland. So he's able to look down over these fjords and glaciers and see these beautiful topographies. We also had him play a game that was designed by this company, Applied VR, specifically for pain management. And it's an immersive game where the user can look around this imaginary world and fire off these little balls, knock down stuffed bears. It's kind of like a carnival game, a little hard to describe verbally. But what it does is it basically immerses the user into this sort of fun, gamified environment. And that allows you to focus your attention completely on this activity, this sort of silly activity, but the sort of spotlight theory of attention suggests that when we recruit our mind and focus it intently or intensely on one small area of function, that we're unable to simultaneously use other parts of our brain, in this case, the parts that are experiencing pain. So we shut down those circuits in the process of focusing our attention on other things.
Wow. I knew our minds were powerful, but that is quite literally mind-blowing here.
Mm-hmm.
As we conclude, Dr. Spiegel, what would you really like to see 5 years from today, if everything goes exactly as you want it to with this VR study, what would you like this to result in nationwide?
Yeah, I think today's virtual reality goggles may not look anything like what's available in 5 years. You know, we're learning more about mixed reality, for example, where eyeglasses themselves on the lens will project all of these images. But whatever the actual form factor is of the virtual reality or mixed reality, what I want to see is having this service available in the hospital. And I imagine a new type of provider called a virtualist. And the virtualist is a clinician who's trained in virtual reality and augmented reality and mixed reality and is able to understand the patient's biopsychosocial illness experience and then match the right visualizations to the right patient and quote-unquote prescribe these virtual reality experiences in the hospital and in the outpatient environment to manage pain, anxiety, depression, and so forth. So that's the model we're creating here. Is if virtual reality is a therapy, then we need a virtual reality pharmacy where I can reach off the shelf to evidence-based visualizations and prescribe them to my patients. So that's what we're hoping for, is to have like a virtual reality consultative service.
That's an exciting future. Before I say goodbye, please give me the link where anybody can see the findings of your research paper that you publish and any findings coming up in the future.
Yeah, we can learn more about our work by going online. Just under Google, you can type in Cedars-Sinai and virtual reality. And from there, can watch a video of how we're using virtual reality at Cedars-Sinai. And we just recently published a paper in the Journal of Internet Research, the mental health version of that journal. And that also can be found online.
Dr. Spiegel, thank you for your time today.
Okay, well, thanks for your interest.
You and I have been listening to Dr. Brennan Spiegel, Director of Health Services Research at Cedars-Sinai. You can find out more about Cedars-Sinai's research on therapeutic virtual reality by Googling Cedars-Sinai Virtual Reality. That's Cedars-Sinai Virtual Reality, and be sure to check out their video on virtual reality on YouTube. It's an exciting one. Once again, the preceding podcast was for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please contact your healthcare professional with any medical questions. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's TWOMAVERIX.com.
And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.